Hello, and welcome to America First. I'm Scotty Nell Hughes. We're talking about something much bigger than soccer, medals, or even championships. We're talking about national image. This summer, the United States has earned international praise for successfully hosting matches during FIFA's expanded Club World Cup, while simultaneously preparing to host the 2026 FIFA World Cup, the largest World Cup in history. And at the same time, Russia's gradual return to international athletic competitions, including renewed participation in Olympic events, has reignited a debate about whether sports can or should be separated from politics. Now, that raises a fascinating question. Why do some countries emerge from hosting global sporting events looking stronger on the world stage, while others come away with their weaknesses exposed? Because here's the reality. Global sporting events, well, they don't create a nation's image, they reveal it. Countries don't walk into the Olympics or the World Cup as blank slates. They arrive with reputations already formed. The event either reinforces those perceptions or challenges them. I'm Scotty Nell Hughes, and this is America First. Throughout history, nations have understood something powerful. People may never visit your country. They may never read your constitution. They may never study your economy, but they will watch your athletes. They will watch your opening ceremonies. They will watch your fans. And in doing so, they'll begin forming opinions about your country itself. You know, sports have become one of the world's greatest instruments of soft power. They allow nations to showcase confidence, competence, culture, innovation, security, hospitality, and national pride. But they also expose what cannot be hidden: political unrest, economic instability, infrastructure failures, public safety concerns, international controversies. In many ways, a World Cup or Olympic Games acts like a global mirror. The world doesn't simply watch the competition. It watches the country who is hosting it. This summer, the United States successfully hosting a FIFA event, FIFA World Cup match, has reinforced long-standing perceptions of American logistical capability, world-class entertainment, security, and public/private partnerships. It also serves as a preview of what the world can expect when America co-hosts the 2026 World Cup with Canada and Mexico. Meanwhile, countries like Argentina and France, well, they remind us that athletic excellence alone doesn't define international reputation. Economic instability, political protest, civil unrest, and security concerns often become just as much a part of the international broadcast as the competition itself. So on this show, we're going to explore why image matters and why in global sports, the biggest victory may not always happen on the field. Joining me now is Angie Wong, Republican committee woman for Miami-Dade County, and Armand Kurdian, a congressional candidate for California's 49th District. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Angie, let's start with you because you're in Miami, host of a lot of the World Cup festivities that have been happening. Let's start with this broader picture. Many people think of the Olympics and the World Cup as sporting events. Governments see them as opportunities to shape global opinion. So how important do you think are international sporting events in influencing how the world views a country?
Yeah, this year's World Cup has been such a success, and especially here, being in Miami, being a host city, we've been watching just amazing fans come through from all corners of the world, and it's become a sport here locally for those in Miami to buy our visitors a beer. We saw the same thing happening in New York and also in Boston. So, you know, America has been just an amazing host to everyone coming in. You know, we're enjoying sports. As you said, this is probably one of the best displays of soft power diplomacy our country has seen. In the middle of such, you know, political divide and turmoil in the world, this has been just such a nice breathing space that we all needed, and we didn't even know we needed it until it happened. So it's just been wonderful to kind of put aside some of the political aspects of world sports and just enjoy each other. And I think that's what you're seeing in bars across the United States. We're also just, you know, showing off American hospitality that everyone is loving and And, you know, you've seen the YouTube clips, you've seen all the social media coming in from European visitors. They love it here. It is none of the bad press that they're receiving back home of, you know, crimes and, you know, all sorts of bad things about the United States. They are coming to Miami. They're enjoying our beaches. They're enjoying our, you know, food and beverage. And our hotels, and also just the American culture. I just love seeing all of it happening.
Well, I absolutely agree with you on that, Angie. Let me ask your colleague here. Do you think the recent World Cup events in the United States actually received praise for organization, security, hospitality, and entertainment? But many would argue those events actually reinforced America's reputation for large-scale execution. What do you think, what does America's success in hosting this event say about the country's global image, and is it accurately portrayed in other countries?
That's a great point, Scotty. When you look at this World Cup event, 48 nations are participating in the World Cup right here. 206 countries started World Cup qualification. And the fact that the U.S. went in on this with Canada and Mexico, I thought was rather brilliant. Because you bring in all those extra nations, you bring in all those extra fans, all those extra countries. Now you've got diplomats, you've got, you know, VIPs from all these countries who are here. So far, the attendance records have been absolutely shattered. In fact, they've been doubled up. Estimates of about a little over 6.5 million fans have actually attended the World Cup events. That is to say nothing of the folks who are actually watching these games in bars and our ability to do things on a large scale. You know, if you want to look at examples in recent history of Olympics that are being held, it is very, very hard to do something like this on this kind of scale. Greece had its problems. Qatar had its problems as well in some of those small nations. Yeah, they want to be highlighted and you want to share the wealth. But it's frankly why the U.S. ends up being about every 25 years. It's why we host the Olympics every 26, 25 years. I fully expect that about 4 or 5 World Cups from now, we'll be hosting it again because we do it so well. And as you can see, everybody's having such a great, terrific time. And you only need to look at the Scots and their penchant for drinking beer and the Senegalese for their parties in Times Square. And who can ever forget the Norwegian row at the same time? Let's say the best part of what the United Nations hoped it actually was on display right now on TV.
And what's amazing, Armin, is I think the people love it. I don't know if the politicians are so happy to see this sort of good tidings spreading around the world, but it definitely has been great to watch that, you know, it's a small world. It's not just a ride at Disney World for the past few weeks here in the United States. I got to ask you, Angie, though, Russia has long viewed international sports as part of its national identity and diplomatic strategy. They successfully hosted the Olympics a few years ago. Now, it seems like Russian athletes are returning to major international competition. Many people are asking whether sports should be separated from politics. Is it fair to those athletes in those countries to be held liable because of the country and the government that they just happen to fall under?
Yeah, it's absolutely not fair to exclude any nation from such a world event. In fact, just a few minutes ago, the FIFA World Cup's leadership, they're coming out to say that they want to now expand the nations included in the next round from 48 nations to 64 nations. Everybody wants in on this. And one of the greatest things that happened this time around is that a lot of the host cities are also major media markets. So there was so much coverage, not just for the World Cup, but like beyond just the typical sports fan like myself to be really included in all this. So I think this really amped up everything. So I'm happy to see that happening. You know, it was really sad to see some of the political tension between the US and Iran and how there's a lot of travel restrictions and things like that. And some nations just have that built in, unfortunately, but you know, it really should be open borders when it comes to sports. I mean, it is just sports and we should all be enjoying each other.
Well, that's the thing, Armin. Can a successful sporting performance improve a country's reputation? Or do you think broader geopolitical realities ultimately will define public perception no matter how great a country does in display?
Well, sports can be the ultimate equalizer at that level of the world, and sometimes you just need something to bring people together and be very positive about. I love Angie. I might part with her a little bit. I said at some level, there might be an element of geopolitics that simply you just can't overcome, like what we've seen between Russia and Ukraine, but you don't want that to be the norm. You don't want it to be the regular thing, especially as we talked about between the U.S. and Iran, who have found themselves playing each other in group stage several times over the last few years. And some of the You saw a lot of Iranian fans watching the World Cup, bringing their, their lion and sword flag instead of the current flag, who were maybe flagged for that, no pun intended, within the stadiums. But regardless of that, sports can actually bring everybody together, and in that sense of community, a sense of positivity, you see the best parts of all nations on display. The culture, the people of nations are generally speaking not enemies of each other. It is always the governments and their national interests which tend to be in conflict. But when you get into a room with a lot of these fans and you don't know politics and you're talking to these folks, I mean, you just, again, you go to Times Square, this is the Senegalese dancers, you saw a bunch of folks wearing uniforms and shirts from a bunch of different nations all together, all having a great time. You're seeing it in a lot of the bars all over the country. You're seeing it in the streets, let alone all the watch locations in, in Kemper, I'm sorry, Kansas City, or in San Diego, where the game may not necessarily being played, but thousands of people are gathering to watch the games all together. And maybe they're all wearing the same uniform for the same country, but you may be different political persuasions, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, you don't care, you don't know, you're all having a great time. And that is, I think, we should something that we should all cherish.
Well, and I agree with that cherishing, but I'm going to stay with you on this, Armin, because you brought up Greece. Argentina produces some of the greatest soccer players and talent in history. France has hosted world-class international sporting events. Yet international coverage often focuses just as much on what's going on outside the games or what's going on wrong inside the games. Inflation, protests, riots, immigration debates, political instability. So, Armin, from your perspective, why do some countries struggle to translate the athletic success into this broader national prestige that countries like the United States and Russia have been able to pull off?
Frankly, it's free market, it's logistics, it's socialism, it is the nature of the economies within these countries which make it very, very challenging for them to do that. Russia had to basically pull out all the stops, and Greece, even all the way to the very end, was scrambling to try to get the hotels and the lodging and the landscaping all together and all right at the very end, and they weren't quite able to do that. It is a Herculean task, and only certain countries in the world have the ability to actually do it. So, size matters in that sense. Economies actually matter. Perhaps earlier planning, or let's say some of these smaller countries which might have a harder time doing it, maybe they should avail themselves of some of the other larger countries who have done this to help them be more successful, because in the end, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Okay, well, Armin, Angie, stay right there. Stay with us. Because when we come back, we'll ask whether sports still has the power to unite the world or whether they've become another arena for geopolitical competition. And we'll discuss whether America's growing success in hosting global events strengthens its leadership on the world stage. More when America First returns. Welcome back to America First. Tonight, we're discussing the intersection of sports, diplomacy, and national image. Still with us are our distinguished guest, Angie Hwang, Republican Committeewoman for Miami-Dade County, and Armin Kurdian, Congressional Candidate for California's 49th District. Thank you so much for staying with us. Angie, some can argue that sports actually bring nations together regardless of politics. Others believe that fans simply bring their existing opinions with them. Can hosting a successful global sporting event actually change how the world views a country, or does it simply reinforce existing perceptions?
Oh, no, I think this has done amazingly for both Americans and also all those abroad. I mean, we talked about soft diplomacy before. There's no better way of actually talking through things than through sports, and I think that's what's happening. You have teams rooting for each other. You have countries rooting for other countries. I think this has been a really important area that we haven't really explored yet. And more importantly, you have a lot of nations kind of coming together in one spot, and they're all in one stadium celebrating something that really is just something that's spectacular. You have these sports stars coming through that normally I've never heard of them until just recently. So I think those guys should become our ambassadors, really. I mean, I think that's what's happening. And also, one of the things that I haven't really heard too much about were the actual host countries, sorry, the host towns that were, really there to kind of welcome these teams. I mean, I talk a lot about this really tiny town called Lawrence, Kansas, where they turned into a mini Algeria. They put up flags, they did crop art, welcoming the Algerian team. And the entire community came out for the teams. So I love these stories. I think they're some of the best stories to come out in 2026. This, again, if we could do this instead of what we're doing in politics, we would probably solve a lot of world problems.
Oh, I think you're right. Armin, you know, one thing many international observers noted during the World Cup was America's confidence. Massive stadiums, advanced technology, private sector partnerships, Costco, Chick-fil-A, a celebration of the bigger the better, entertainment alongside competition. Do you think that America's ability to host events at this scale reinforces this perception that the United States remains the world's premier destination for global events, both athletic and others?
I think you can answer your question by looking. Remember that one of those Instagram videos of one of the Europeans marching through Costco saying he'd never seen anything, so many of this kind of stuff in his life. So, you know, it is a hallmark of our economy that we are able to actually go out and do this. And, you know, free markets have been shown to be able to increase freedom, increase liberty. And a lot of the folks who've been coming from across the world, granted some of their economies are free market, but they've never experienced anything like the US. And on top of that, perhaps even more importantly, you consistently hear another common theme, which is the hospitality of the Americans who've been so welcoming and so excited to have everybody here. To Andy's point, Lawrence, Kansas, you know, home of the University of Kansas Jayhawks. That's where I went to school. So it's a lot of fun. You get to meet a lot of people. Imagine the guys who drive your Uber and that might be from Nigeria or Algeria or Senegal or somewhere else. They're friendly. Just imagine that on 1,000, 10,000 times scale. It's a lot of fun. And you hope that energy will carry through. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But I think it's really kind of up to us to make it happen.
Armin, I gotta criticize you on that shameless plug. I just can't believe that you did that. I mean, come on now. Everybody knows that Oklahoma is better than Kansas, but that's another conversation in our world. Okay, so
that's all good.
To your point, when you talk about, you know, it's two ways, and you're running for office. You're a candidate for office right now. Do you think it is actually as you mentioned, the small towns were very welcoming to the athletes and to their visitors and their supporters, but it was both ways. It seemed like both that the supporters from these other countries were very welcoming and open, like we saw with Scotland and the Scottish that took over, like you said, the cones and going everywhere from Boston all the way down here to Miami. They were also very welcoming. It's this dual sort of hospitality that both sides showed each other. That does that work well, though, for people running for office that continuously try to tell us that, hey, we're all supposed to not get along. The world hates us and we hate the world. Is that sort of the perception that maybe things like these games help blow up and show that it's just a facade?
Well, again, we talk about national interests in governments and trying to separate them from the actual people. You know, look at the conflict between the U.S. and Iran. And I've commented on this dozens of times on a variety of networks and always say the people of Iran are our friends. They're not our enemies. In fact, I was there back in 1975. My mother was even born in Tabriz in Iran. A lot of these folks, they have maybe different cultures, you know, different food, different art. But at the end of the day, you wouldn't know the politics if you just got into a room and had a little party with them, had some drinks and had some of their food. So that's what we have to remember. It's hard sometimes to do that, but we have to challenge ourselves to always try to focus on the positive.
Exactly. And Angie, should we hold our government officials accountable? I mean, there's always been this debate over athlete activism, diplomatic boycotts, and whether international sporting organizations should weigh political issues when making these kind of decisions. So, Angie, is this kind of call them out? Should sports remain politically neutral, or do you think it's just something that can be used for the good when there is a problem going on within the country?
Scotty, I remember right before the World Cup started, Democrats were saying that there were going to be ICE arrests at the World Cup. They were making such a fuss so that people would not go and they would be putting scares into people. None of that happened. None of that was realistic. So you could see how politics got into popular culture. And, you know, I'm very happy, you know, that those rumors kind of just got squashed and we were just able to enjoy a great game. But yeah, no, I think that, you know, you have to kind of call out people when you have to call them out, and just so that they don't, you know, rain on a parade. I mean, this was such a great international event. Don't let politics spoil this, even from, you know, Republicans as well. Not that I heard much of it. I was just really happy to see our political leaders right there in the box, celebrating with our athletes, no matter what team they were in. I think I saw Marco Rubio more, you know, in the stands than I did, you know, anywhere else. So he was definitely enjoying the games. This was such a great introduction as well to soccer in the United States. I don't think a lot of our kids knew too much about soccer until this round. I mean, it really became so mainstream. And I love that everyone was wearing the jerseys. But, you know, at the end of the day, the World Cup economics brought in over $17 billion into the U.S. GDP. And we're not even done counting the math yet. We're still not done with the jobs that it's created and all the tourism that it's created. And also the aftermath, all the great publicity that the United States got. We're going to see a lot more Europeans, I think, coming to our cities after this, because there's just been so much good vibes coming from, you know, from what they're going home and telling all their friends and families about. It's like, United States, it's a safe place. It's not filled with crime, and it's, you're not going to get carjacked. You're not going to do any of these things. You know, for the most part, the police has done such an amazing job at keeping all that at bay and our cities clean. So, you know, bravo to the American certainly the city mayors who did such a great job making sure that we're a great host city around the country.
Armand, President Trump only really kind of got involved when there was the one issue about the United States club that was playing. You really didn't see much come out of the White House. Do you think President Trump should have stepped in more, or should he, did he just handle it the right way and kind of watch from the sidelines? Armand?
I think he handled it the right way, watching from the sidelines. Trump is already... Can you hear me?
Yes, okay, yeah.
Trump is already bigger than life as it is. Okay, he's bigger than life as it is. I think he's done the right thing in being kind of the ambassador. I think a lot of the quote-unquote controversy about him calling FIFA on Bulligan's behalf, I think, was a little bit overblown. But to your previous point about trying to keep the politics out of it, yeah, I think it's fine where he was, what he has done. I know there was some controversy with Senator Mark Kelly wearing a Mexican jersey, and I was like, you know, it's... He was there with a bunch of Mexican fans. He's, you know, supporting the one particular game. He wasn't rooting against the U.S. as I saw it sports. You know, everybody was having a good time. So I think you can give people a lot of latitude for supporting other countries. I mean, heck, I was rooting for Cape Verde. I think they won a lot of their hearts. That doesn't make me anti-American or against the U.S. men's national team. Whenever they were on TV, you know who I was rooting for. I wish they would have done better, but still, hey, it's sports. It's a lot of fun, and yeah.
Okay, so Angie, as the United States prepares for more global sporting events in the years ahead, can you think of another big opportunity for America, not just to host a tournament, but to strengthen its image around the world?
Oh, we have another shot at this in Los Angeles in 2 years when the Olympics goes there. I think that's going to be an amazing time. I think that, California, as Armand knows, it could use some improvement, especially when we have a lot of world visitors come through. So I think President Trump is trying to work out the best scenario there. I remember back in Beijing, I think it was 2008 when they hosted the Olympics there. They cleaned up that city, sparkling clean. I'm expecting the U.S. to do exactly the same, because once you get into Los Angeles, you're going to be traveling around. It's not just going to be, you know, visitors tend to stay here for quite some time and hopefully see other cities as well. So I think we're going to be a great host there. I think between now and that Olympics, there could be a lot of diplomacy that can happen, you know, and that would be an amazing opportunity to start welcoming in people, minus the politics. I know that the 250 America celebrations was supposed to do that, and it failed, and it went back right into politics because they don't like President Trump being the president during the 250th birthday, but that's what it was. But it should not have been political. It should have been a celebration of America. Hopefully we can keep politics out of the Olympics next time.
Except what year is that happening again, Angie? When is the Olympics in LA?
28.
What else is happening in 2028, guys? I think the chances of keeping politics out of that's going to be slim to none, except we might need a great distraction too. So Armand, Angie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks Scotty.
You know, this discussion reminds us that sports are about far more than trophies, even though it is nice to win. They are about storytelling, about opening ceremony. It tells a story. Every stadium tells a story. Every fan tells a story. And collectively, those stories shape how nations are viewed around the world. The United States didn't suddenly become respected because it hosted a successful tournament. Rather, successful execution reinforced long-standing perceptions of American innovation, capacity, and confidence. Now, the same principles applies to every nation. Global sporting events don't invent national reputations. They actually magnify the good and the bad. Sometimes they highlight a country's greatest strengths. Other times, they expose the deepest challenges. But in the end, perhaps the greatest lesson is this. Winning the championship is wonderful, but winning the world's confidence, well, that lasts much longer. My thanks tonight to our guests for an outstanding discussion, and thank you for watching. I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been America First.